Hosting for this podcast is made possible through mtgcast.com, which is supported by a generous contribution from quietspeculation.com, Magic's premier trading and financial news site.
We'll actually take a look at what we're going to be talking about today. So we'll do our standard rundown. There was a GP and an open, and we'll want to talk about those briefly. We know it's the tail end of the standard format, so it's getting a little stale. But you know, there were some shining lights or some different things that did happen. So we'll definitely want to talk about that. We are also coming quickly upon Theros, and there are a few new cards that have been spoiled and some new mechanics that we definitely want to touch on and to bring it up just because it is relevant. As even, you know, starting this weekend and, you know, continuing throughout September, we do have spoiler season, which it's like Christmas every 4 months or 3 months. It's wonderful.
Unless you're Jordan and you don't believe in Santa.
And you fucking hate it. God damn it.
God, it is the worst.
But you're going to love this. It's fucking Theros. Like, how could you not like it?
Oh, man. You're just, like, saying to me, like, dude, it's like... Like, it's like tofu. People love tofu, and they want you to be excited about tofu. And you're like, no, man, I hate tofu. This is exactly how I feel about tofu.
You're wrong. You're wrong. The people who are pushing tofu hate tofu, and they are desperately trying to get someone else to please eat this so I'm validated. This is totally different from
playing. Exactly. Players. You understand what I'm talking about.
It's like, it's totally
you guys are all like, man, I love cards that I'm going to spend a billion. I was, my first experience with spoiler season, I spent $20 on Lotlith Trolls, okay? Because everybody's like, they're the best card ever! And they're not the best card ever. So
people make mistakes. It's all right.
Every 4 months, man. every 4 months we do this shit.
Well, too bad. You're strapping in.
I'm in this game for the long haul, regardless of the worst time of my life every 4 months.
There you go. It's fine. And then the last thing we'll talk about is our question of the week. We are going to return to the lovely question of the week, but we'll hold off on that until we get there. So first things first is standard recap. So we have a few things, a few tournaments I want to look at. The first thing that I think we have on this list is to take a look at the Star City Games Open. That tournament was taken down by Big Red. Big Red deck had some Thundermaw Hellkites, had some Burning Earths, a bunch of Mountains and some Mutavaults. Not your quick, fast deck that's running light lands. I mean, they had 25. He had a 25 land count, 22 Mountains, three Mutavaults. And the list itself was run by Joseph Herrera. I've seen his name pop up before in the open circuit, so I definitely know that he is a grinder in there. Guys, what do you think about this list? Is it something that we'll see going forward? Oh, before I get started, I don't want to steal your thunder, Mike, but this list does feature a Chandra Planeswalker card. I don't know.
Oh, man.
Just give me a minute. I just love Chandra.
While Mike's doing that.
Just let that settle in, Mike.
Use your microphone while you take care of yourself.
Wow, that's... No. I don't need a plastic cover for my mat.
I want to give Joseph Herrera a little bit more due than he's been good at SCG Opens. This guy's got 7 top 8s at either Standard or Legacy Opens, all over the globe, Baltimore, Nashville, Somerset, Atlanta, so he is definitely a grinder. I think the best thing I like about this deck, and it's more of an aesthetic thing, look at all the land bases in Standard right now, and they're super, super complicated with one of X check land or X shock land, and he's just like, yeah, I got 22 Mountains and 3 Mutavolts. My mana base costs like $8. It's just really funny. It's actually not that funny now that you say it out loud. But it's a nice change, definitely. Like, Big Red is fun. I think it has some staying power zero staying power, actually, because most of these things rotate.
I mean, I've always liked this archetype, like, all the way back to, like, Mirrodin when you were playing Seeding Songs and Arcsloggers. And, like, obviously, Thunderwild Hellkite's a little bit better of a 5-drop than Arcsloggers ever was, but that's, you know, power creep for you. I do feel like the Ash Elves and the Boros Reckoners here, like, I think what's interesting is when you look at this deck, you're just thinking, like, oh, red deck, attack. But I think what's actually missing is that against mid-range decks, with all the first strike, like, this deck can actually play a really good defense and just, like, Planeswalker you out or, you know, Thunderwild Hellkite you out. So we can actually play a control game, especially with the board the way it is. Like, I really like how... You know, you don't think control when you think red, but, like, in this case, you can.
Yeah, most certainly. I definitely think that it has some aggro angles, but it definitely can last until the end. and definitely keep its footing. Now, it battled through, you know, various other lists that we've seen before. Second place was Junk Aristocrats. There are actually two aristocrats of varying flavors in the top eight. There's also a blue-white control list, which is really becoming the new control... Well, there are two blue-white control lists, which are really becoming the go-to control lists that people are going to want to be playing. Because, you know, things like Esper, blue-white-red, have a really hard time with Burning Earth, but with the mana base that you can pull off with two colors, it makes it a lot easier to actually, you know, be able to run this kind of control list. So expect to see that more and more as you go out and go to battle in Standard, especially in Cincinnati. And then we have a Gen mid-range player that finished third, no way. Another one that finished sixth. You know what? They're going to be there, all right? And then tailing out our top eight in the open was a black-green mid-range deck. Now, I can't say that I haven't been tempted by this black green the rock deck. In all honesty, it's been something that I've been wanting to try. I don't know. What do you guys think about this list? I mean, I know it's tearing up online. I know it's tearing up like the standard dailies and stuff like that. And I know that with my experience with it, it definitely kicks my ass when I'm playing Jund. Maybe I just don't know how to play against it, but for some reason, they just always seem to have something.
I talked to you guys about how I feel about these lists. I mean, they've got some good interactions, but, like, you know, I've been playing Bant Control for a while, and I just feel like any of the decks that run, like, even the blue-white deck now, you know, that are running Sinks of Revelations and, like, easy, like, you're playing Desecration Demon, but stuff like Azorius Charm makes certain cards terrible like that, or just even having, you know, Supreme Verdicts, just, like, you're like, okay, beyond that, your threats aren't great. And just, like, you can't beat Revelation just about ever. Like, you don't have Rakdos Return. You know, you have Underworld Connections, which is, you know, if you get it on time, is fine. But it plays a totally different game than Revelation, where you're like, oh, I don't have the Revelation now. I'm going to draw into it. But if you draw Underworld Connections on turn 20, it doesn't help you. So it's, I don't know. This deck keeps winning, but I feel like in a pure control matchup or against a Revelation control deck, I just don't see how it wins.
I agree.
I mean, sorry. I mean, there's a reason that it lost to Blue White Control in the quarterfinals.
Right.
So, yeah.
It smashes Jund. Like Morgan said, like, I played this at the PTQ in Columbus hosted by Comic Town, and I can do, if I don't have Underworld Connections and boarded games on time, there's zero I can do about a Disciple of Bolas on a Desecration Demon.
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
And that's nasty, but like you said, you don't care about that, because what's six cards to the guy who's probably going to draw 15?
Mutilates, Tragic Slips, Putrefies.
Oh, bro, you almost got my Aetherlyn. So I hear what you're saying. As blue-white-red and blue-white start to take more shape and control, this deck will get worse. I feel like this Brian Seep guy, the rock player, probably just hit a lot of Jund and a lot of red-green throughout the day.
Which is fine. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean, it's your deck's matchup. He probably anticipated that field. Good for him. And then he just was like, you know, round one, you, like, sit down to play your opponent, and he drops, like, turn one Glacial Foundry or whatever.
Glacial Foundry? Where's that land?
Hollowed Fountain is what I was going for.
Hollowed Fountain, you were Sacred way Foundry, off. Glacial Fortress, these are all different cards.
I was just in a different land. But, you know, he's probably just like, oh, shit, I guess I'm just dead. And he was.
I mean, I think definitely this deck, you know, when you talk about where Standard has gone, this deck exemplifies exactly where Standard's like at right now. But that blue-white deck, I mean, like, post-rotation, that deck's just going to be so good. Oh, God.
I agree. Yeah, I'm picking up my blue-white cards. I might actually play blue, guys. I might actually do it. Don't know if I can understand it.
Good.
But I feel like I haven't been the same since I'm not able to play Junk Reanimator with confidence like I used to. And Jund is fine. It's just quite there. And I want something more out of the relationship with my magic cards, and I just don't know where to go next.
Oh, God.
So maybe it's blue. Maybe it's blue, and maybe that's where I'm at right now. I don't know. The last thing I want to talk about is Brian Brondewin's 10th place list, the black-white mid-range list. I kind of watched him play this list throughout the Open. I kind of like this list, too. I don't know. It's probably still not where you want to be at, maybe, or needs tweaking, but I think it's kind of a nifty little list that has some interesting interactions. One thing I want to point out is that I did play Red-Green Kibler at FNM, and I went up against just a brew that was there, but they had Blind Obedience, and Blind Obedience is a 2 of, and it's a 3 of across 75. There's 2 main and 1 side. Blind Obedience is a beating against Kibler aggro.
It just turns off haste.
Yeah, the thing your deck is really good at, it's irrelevant now. I don't care anymore. If anyone out there hasn't seen Brian Brondewin's list, he actually wrote an article about it as well, kind of followed up with it with his article this week. Definitely check it out. If you want to play something interesting and something that looks like a lot of fun, I would definitely say check out this black-white list. You know, you still get to play with some awesome cards. You get to still get to play with your Desecration Demons and your Restoration Angels, which is really nice. If you have the cards for it already, you know, that's fine. I wouldn't necessarily go, say, invest in Drolf's Messengers right now if you don't have them already.
They're probably like $2 right now anyway. Yeah, they're $2.
And so I guess it's not that bad if you have to buy three of them. You know, whatever. It's definitely something that I would say, if you haven't tried out, you know, give it a shot. If you're wanting to go to something different and want something to play, I've been known to favor a good black-white deck, so.
Man, this man loves, like, the way you love Acidic Slime, Brian Brondewin loves Obsidian. I mean, just like...
I think so. I think
that's supposed to be more Obsidian.
I'm really sad that I'm not going to Cincy, because like he's going to be there. I would be like, hey, I like Acidic Slime too. Can we be Acidic Slime Bros?
Oh God, I'm really glad you're not going to Cincy now.
Jesus.
I think that he would be fine with it. I don't understand.
I'm sure he wouldn't put you like an idiot on the spot.
Whatever, guys. me and Brian Brondewin, we have a connection that.
BBD, if you're listening to this, I apologize.
This special needs child wanted me to sign as Acidic Slime, so...
he even had his last name on his shirt. I don't even get it.
So his parents can find him.
Oh, God! I already path to exile his own token in the modern tournament. If you don't get that reference, go listen to episode 11.
Good times, guys. Awesome.
Keep the ball rolling here.
So there was also, was there anything else anyone wanted to say about the Star City Games Open before we move on?
It's pretty, I mean, what can you say about Jun Mendridge and the Aristocrats?
Yeah, I know, I agree, I understand, I know where you're at.
Dex, man, yeah, alright.
It is what it is.
Yep.
So, there was also, obviously, a GP, and it was a GP held in Japan, and let me take a look here.
What was the name of the city, Morgan?
Kitakyushu?
I want Morgan to say it.
Kitakyushu.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
What?
I had to look at it and understand.
That's as fun as I was expecting.
Yeah.
Man. No, you know what? I do. There was one thing I wanted to talk about with Jun. I know I just made fun of it. Why, you know, in Jun we run a wide array of removal. Doomblade, Abrupt Decay, Putrefy, Amizium Mortars perhaps. How many times, Morgan, scale of 1 to 10, right, that's actually not accurate. How many times do you think, in the case of playing Jun, you felt bad with a Putrefy in your hand? Against a deck that, against pretty much every deck, because even Control plays Resto Angel.
I wouldn't say it's like, I feel bad when I'm stuck on two lands. That makes me feel pretty bad when I have a Putrefy in my hand.
Sure. I mean, how often is Jun, are you really keeping that two-lander?
I mean, it happens, right? It happens sometimes.
Are you keeping two-landers on the play? Because we might...
Well, two-landers on the play, probably not, unless I have a Farseek. So there's potentially, they go turn one, Black Source, Duress, take your Farseek, go. And, like, so that happened. That has happened to me before.
I guess if we're in Magical Hell. But, yeah, no, okay, fair enough.
No, but it's a real thing.
John, like, you're in Magical Hell.
Yeah, in the Jun Mirror match, you side in Duress for that specific reason.
Right. No,
because if you could do that, it is a huge blow to the opposing player.
I was just thinking the other day, and I'm kind of curious what you guys think, is why don't... Like, right now, I think that the stock Jun list, unless you're being techie, is running two Putrefies max, right? At some point, some people are cutting down to one. I want to go up to three in place of, not in place of Mizzium Mortars, because then you still just die to Blood Baron or whatever, but in place of something, I don't know, because I've never drawn a Putrefy against a creature deck and just been like, man, I wish this was anything else.
Well, I mean, if you'd want it somewhere else, I would say put it in the side somewhere. In all honesty, cut one of your sideboard cards that you don't feel is pulling its weight and put another Putrefy. I honestly think that the cards I need to change on my sideboard, I don't think I need more removal as in Putrefy, because the removal that I have in Jund itself, I always feel is fine. Things that I've been thinking of doing is putting in, like, Ultimate Price as an answer to the cards that really do affect us. Things like Lifebane Zombie that we can't kill with Doomblade. Still kills Thundermon Hellkite, Hellrider, stuff like that. So that's the card I've been thinking about getting some more play with.
I mean, but still, even then, why not putrefy? It's less restrictive. It only costs one more. It costs one more green mana.
Yeah, but I mean, like that one more green mana can be huge. Because if you're saying that if I'm on turn four and I have four mana, but I have to hold back three mana for putrefy against red green aggro, and I can't Farseek or I can't play a Scavenging Ooze, like that's devastating. I think you want cheap removal, and that putrefy is awesome. It is definitely one of the premium removal spells in Jund. You still need to balance that out with cheaper removal spells, so that you can have flexibility in your plays.
But you be able to.
I just want to say that you can double up on turns four or five.
Right, it's all about. Sam Black's a big proponent of this too, but it's all about maximizing your mana. And like, you've got to be able to, like, if you're going to stay on curve, but also stay ahead on board, which is what Jund is good at, you need to have a good mix. Now, Putrefy does get better going forward, # Enchant Effect, but.
Oh God, I love that. So good. I agree, and I mean, obviously Putrefy is going to be a premium removal spell. We still have Doomblade, we'll still have Putrefy, and we'll still have Ultimate Price. So, like, pretty black removal is not something that's going to be going away anytime soon. And I honestly think that with such heavy enchantments that are going to be coming out, obviously Golgari Charm is great for that as well, so that's green black. And then we have, you know, Putrefy, which kills artifacts, which also kills artifacts that are also enchantments, so... That might be relevant up here coming soon, as we obviously know. You know, maybe Jordan won't be so bad for investing in those cool trolls, because...
What's awkward about that is Putrefy actually makes us not able to regenerate.
That's true. That's awkward. So it's probably still a bad investment. I'm sorry, Jordan. I still think that 2 is fine. I don't want to get stuck with one of those in my hand when I want to do something else during my turn. I'd leave my shields down, and so you can swing in with your Hellrider or what have you, or your Thundermaw Hellkite. I really, like I said, I really want to experiment with Ultimate Price. I really feel that I have a Curse of Death's Hold my sideboard, and I've always debating, like, it's such a limited card with its functionality, but it always feels powerful when I cast it. But I might just need to remove that for another just cheap effective removal spell, because the card matchups that I lost against were, you know, the matchups where an Ultimate Price might have actually been helpful rather than harmful, and where Curse of Death's Hold just didn't do anything. I mean, it's just tweaking from here on in. I'm not going to switch any other deck or anything like that, but...
No, of course not.
So we'll go ahead and we'll take a look at the GP in Japan. Definitely, we see similar lists here, obviously, but there were some standouts from what I can see. It was taken down by everyone's favorite deck, good old Banned Hexproof, piloted by...
Yeah, everyone's favorite deck.
And there are actually more than the multiple. Yeah, there are actually multiple, you know, Banned Hexproof lists. The one piloted by Raymond Tan was the one that was able to take down. And, I mean, when you look at it, it's just your regular old Banned Hexproof list. The other people that were running Banned Hexproof, I think it was Su Jin Kuo, was definitely running a Banned Hexproof list. Raymond Tan, I think that was it. Now, the interesting thing about this list, about the top eight of this tournament, there's no Jund whatsoever. So we have two Kibler lists, we have two Hexproof lists, we have, yeah, this is a Naya list from the looks of it, right? Yeah,
yeah, so, Naya with Reverberate, of all
Naya
things.
With Reverberate.
That's so awesome.
Japanese GPs are always awesome, because you get these like little one-off cards where you're just like, huh, I wonder how that was good.
I want to know what else to play that happened with that card. Oh, and that, I mean, how could we forget about junk tokens? Because that's clearly still a thing, right?
Might play that this week. Might play tomorrow.
No fear. No fear of the bonfires.
Nah, I'm good. I'm just going to put more rebound defenses.
Oh, God, that'd be so embarrassing. Oh, bonfire for 90. Oh, okay, lol. Oh, God.
I want to live the dream of going end of turn Advent of the Worm, untap Sign of Yudagazi.
Oh God,
that's disgusting.
Maybe you just drop your pants and ejaculate all over the table.
Wow,
we have gone down a dark place.
Can we look at the Delver list for a minute?
Oh yeah, I heard about this. Yeah. Go ahead, take a look at the Takahashi.
So this, I mean, this seems to pop up every time there's a Japanese GP in Standard. A Delver list makes it through, and just like. It plays 19 lands, and you don't know how it hits land drops. I mean, he's playing two copies of Quicken. Quicken says, okay, the next sorcery card you cast this turn can be cast as a Had Flash. Draw a card. Guess how many sorceries he's playing in this list.
Is he not playing?
The correct answer is zero. So he's using it to cycle. It is one blue,
yeah.
Cycle. I don't know. I don't...
Why wouldn't you just play two lands instead of the Quicken?
Well, because you want to... you want Quicken in the yard for your Rootchatter's bike, and Quicken also flips your Delvers.
Oh, God.
And it does draw you a card.
Like, this guy has to be luckier than me.
I mean, very much so. I mean, he's running Essence Scatter, but he's not running Mana Leak, obviously. So, like, removal, like, on a Delver, like, there's just so many ways to, like, stunt this deck, but there's also just draws with this deck where, like, you probably feel like it was Delver Evolved, where you're like, turn one Delver, turn two, unsummon your guy, you know, bash for three, Snapcaster, unsummon, Restoration Angel this, guys, you know, like, you feel like you're amazing, and in other hands, you're probably just like, well, I'm gonna cast
you got me, bro, yeah. What was his record during Swiss? 8-1? Good lord. What?
Yep.
Now, it takes a lot of time to play this deck correctly, but I look at this deck and I just feel like these kind of decks make me giggle too, because a lot of players will pick these decks up like, oh man, Delver's good again. And, like, honestly, it probably isn't.
No.
And they'll cry I saw the Quicken, so I'm like, that's interesting. And then I'm like, no, actually, that's really interesting. So I guess out of the board, you can bring in Supreme Verdicts and then, like, Quicken Gotcha? But I don't know. That list seems a little...
What is his worst matchup, he says? I hate Voice of the Resurgence. It's about as bad as for me as Great Stable Stag. I used Attention's here in Supreme Verdict to get rid of Voice Series. Okay. I mean, I feel like Jun wouldn't be great for him either. Like,
Jun can still just lose to, like, a Geist. Like, Jun can just, like, still, like, not have a Farseek and not have a Liliana and just be dead.
That's fair. I mean, like, I'd like to think I have a blocker.
I feel like a Geist Saint Draft probably, you know, just like it does in the Hexproof matchup still, just like it's done since its existence, just leads to some really frustrating games where your opponent is just like, well, you know, I can't do anything. Like, you the Jun player kept a hand with a couple land and, like, a bunch of removal spells and just, like, stares at a Geist Saint Draft for three turns and dies. It's a little frustrating.
No, I mean, I hear what you're saying. That's definitely true. What card? Oh, God. Hey, you're right. Hey, Morgan, this guy that played this Delver list thinks Chase Architect of Thought and Blood Baron and Fiscope are primed to go up. He goes, what cards do you think are most likely to get reappraised by players after rotation? Chase Architect of Thought and Blood Baron and Fiscope. Boom, boom.
Yeah.
He also played Quickens, so he might be just be crazy. I mean, I don't know.
Can't we really trust his opinion on things?
But yeah, I thought that list was interesting. I like the tokens list as well. Like I said, I'm probably going to try that out for FNM this week. But I don't know, I feel like even in a stale format, the Japanese always managed to throw some interesting things out there where you're just like, oh, sure, okay, why not?
Yeah, I completely agree. And like I said, it was very exciting to see something a little bit different, especially like a tokens list. Because again, I've been known to like tokens lists, so, you know. Got a bit of a preference.
Exile on this list, though. Oh, yeah,
I wish. If only, I'd play it then. But, I mean, that was pretty much everything for Standard. Like I said, guys, it's coming to the tail end, and everyone wants something new. It just so happens that there's some new things around the corner in Theros. So we got some more information about Theros this week. We kind of at this point in time, pretty much filled out what the mechanics are going to be. They were kind of revealed throughout this week. So does anyone want to discuss some of the mechanics? We'll first start with the ones that were spoiled via the mothership, via the intro packs that were kind of released, and we got to see the last few ones. One of them was actually the redesigned one. It was a redesigned version of Chroma.
Chroma, yeah.
So it's called Devotion. So basically, what it does is it has a certain effect based on the amount of mana symbols you have on the permanents you control. So the creature that has this is the Abhorrent Overlord. Sure, I'm probably saying that a little bit wrong.
Abhorrent. You would do pronounce the H.
Yes. So it's a 6/6 for 5 and 2 black flying. When it enters the battlefield, I'll put a number of 1/1 black harpy creatures. We get harpy creature tokens, guys.
What is a harpy?
It's a bird woman.
Yeah.
Oh God.
So don't call your girlfriend a herpy.
They're nasty.
Hey, no worries. You have to have a girlfriend to call her that. So
well, I'm just saying. Or right you go hand. On a date with a nice lady. Don't be like, oh, Mike.
You're such a harpy.
You remind me of a harpy. Oh. I'll give you my devotion to black.
I don't know where we're going with this, but I don't think we should go there.
We're in too deep. Oh, man.
Anyway.
Back out. Snow has devotion to black.
Oh, God.
Just stop. We can't do this.
Oh, God.
Anyway, so you actually get a number of 1/1 like harpy creature tokens with flying placed on the battlefield based on your devotion to black. So that's how it's worded, so things will be based on your devotion to X or Y.
So it's at least two here, because there's two black mana symbols in the casting cost. Right.
Exactly. So it's you get 8 power worth of creatures with flying for 7 mana.
Which is value, so...
Yeah. It's not a bad exchange. So that's pretty awesome. Mike, if you want, you can take a look here at Bestow, if you want, kind of...
I do. I want to say one more thing about the Overlord, though. Somebody threw it out there, and I don't remember where, it might be on Twitter, I don't know, but the Dark Prophecy works really well with this guy, because it has 3 black mana symbols, and this guy forces you to sack a creature each turn, so God. You're like, oh, make 5 guys, then sack it to lose a life draw card. It seemed interesting. It, yeah, a little cute.
Certainly.
We'll move on to Bestow. We had a creature named, enchantment creature, so wrap your minds around that. Buy your naturalizes now, ladies and gentlemen. Celestial Archon is 3 colorless and 2 white. It's essentially a Serra Angel. It's a 4/4 flyer with first strike. But it also has a keyword ability called Bestow. For 2 white and 5, you can cast this card for its Bestow cost, and it becomes an aura spell. So it's an enchant creature that gives the enchanted creature +4/+4, flying in first strike. Now, I'm going to be honest. When I first read this, I was like, I'm paying more mana to make it an aura. But after watching some back and forth with Aaron Forsyth on Twitter, what's interesting about this mechanic is you can cast it for its, you know, bestow cost. And, like, for example, like, they Doomblade your guy in response. That's been the classic way to make enchant creatures terrible, right? In this case, it still enters the battlefield as a creature. Once that target is no longer valid, it's like, oh, okay, I'm no longer an aura then. I'm also a creature. Mm-hmm. So, like, Bestow is a way to get around these 2-for-1s. I'm interested to see, they haven't released a FAQ yet on, you know, the frequently asked questions, you don't want to say FAQ, on the new abilities. So I'm like, I don't know if that means, like, when the creature dies, like, does this stay on the field as a creature? Like, I'm not
right,
sure on that.
That's what I'm curious about.
But, like, it's definitely interesting, and it's a very powerful, like, it's a powerful creature in its own right. I mean, 4/4 flying and first strike, it's not bad.
Right, for such a cheap thing, too. 5? I mean...
But, I mean, like, you can also, like, throw... I mean, obviously, this card, the bestow cost wasn't pushed, but there's going to be at least some card... When I say pushed, I guess I should clarify. Pushed, you know, when they take a mechanic and they make something extremely playable so that gets seized tournament play, like Gorfland Rampager is, like, the pushed version of Bloodrush. This is obviously at 7 mana, not the pushed version, but I'm interested to see what we will get that is, you know, tournament ready. But this ability is interesting, to say the least.
Can we talk about the art on that card? It is like a...
It's like a god card, right?
Yeah, it's an Archon, is the creature subtype, which is sweet to begin with. And that's my favorite creature type in StarCraft, or unit type in StarCraft. And then, so there's this Archon dude riding this Jesus ram, and it's like, like, he's got, like, all these gold necklaces and this flowing blonde hair, and, like, he's focused on whatever's ahead of him if you look deeply into his eyes. And he's like a Jesus ram. It's insane. I will buy 12 of this card just because it looks so pretty.
I was interested to see how this new border, you know, looks foil, and because this is the intro pack rare, it'll be foil immediately, so I'm excited to see what it looks like.
Are you going
to
buy it?
No. It's not, I mean, I'll be honest, it's not a card I'd probably play. I mean, it's a cool idea, but I'm not going to play a Serra Angel with a 7 mana, you know, aura ability. But again, I could be wrong. Maybe it'll be amazing. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of lends itself to be pushed, and if it's pushed the wrong way, it could be really bad, because, like, no matter what, like, there's almost no downside. Like, it's easier to remove, because your enchantment hate now hits creatures, which is really interesting. But, I mean, like, they can't just kill your guy in response, like, you still get a guy? Like, that's just insane. Like, in the pushed version, like, the pushed card that's going to have this, like, it's going to be insane. So, like, people already hate Thraktusk in voice, it's like, so kill your guy, I still have a guy. Like, I still get a guy. Your 1/1 removal is garbage. What are you even doing?
And I think it's it's doing what this set said it was going to do, make enchantments playable, right?
I just want to make sure, I want to read how they, I want to, you know, they always do the rules article, they'll probably have it next week or the next 2 weeks, and I want to know specifically how this works. It's hard, right. It's hard to, and I actually had a conversation with this on Facebook about this, but it's kind of confusing that they just kind of, like, released all of these abilities without clarification on what they do, because, like, you could read this card for the first time, decide in your head what it does, and it's hard to change that first impression sometimes. So I'm interested to see what the actual ruling is, how these work.
And that'll be definitely something everybody that's listening will go over that when it gets announced on the very next show. That way, when you go to your FNM, you don't get hosed by not knowing the rules. And, yeah. And you can catch your opponent and be like, actually, on At Your End Step, which you can find at MTGcast, they talk about how this...
Please don't sound that pretentious, please.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, if you do that, we probably wouldn't like you in real life, but you should.
According to Jordan on At Your End Step, who is a great-looking man and a wonderful lover.
you sound like one of our Twitter followers right now. Oh, God. Yeah, no, I'm definitely... it kind of nerded me. I love reading those FAQs because they're really well-written most of the time. And I hope I can play this for an instant 2-for-1 no matter what happens. Like, if it's a ranker, a one-time ranker, oh, God.
But, like, it's not even ranker. Like, ranker, you would still fizzle if, like, it's the creature dies. It's better than ranker,
right? Yeah.
Technically, it can be better than ranker, in theory. Because
it's like a weird combination of Rancor and Angelic Destiny and...
it's a Ram and a Jesus Ram.
Whatever.
Whatever. Anyway.
It's the best artist ever.
At least the Jesus Ram exists.
That's true.
Well, the next mechanic that we actually have in that Theros intro packs is Heroic.
Well, we've talked about Heroic.
Yeah, we talked about Heroic and Monstrosity.
Talk about Scry, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah! You just got right into it. You just like, Scry.
Dodge my consulting my life basis. So, Scry is coming back, so buy your Serum Visions now.
They haven't done Serum Visions yet. Magma Jet, though. Magma Jet is sweet.
Technically, let's preface this before we get all excited. Technically, has there been confirmation that Scry is from the mothership?
I mean, there's an image of Thassa, which we can talk about here.
That image is a mock-up, just to be fair.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay, well, seeing Thassa and then having Magma Jets, you know, pseudo-spoiled, you know, the couple days after, I mean, I'm going to call this pretty much, you know, if we're talking Mythbusters here, I'm calling this one confirmed.
So, yeah. I just, you know, hey, we don't want to be wrong. Some people listen to us, apparently.
Isn't the confirmed text at the beginning of your upkeep Scry 1?
Scry 1, yes. So yes. Thassa is Thassa, God of the Sea, or Thassa, however, you know, God of the Sea, legendary enchantment creature god, because why not? Indestructible. As long as your devotion to blue is less than 5, Thassa isn't a creature. When it is there, Thassa becomes a 5/5, which is insane when you think about the fact that you're only paying 3 mana for the possibility of a 5/5 indestructible. At the beginning, you upkeep Scry 1, and then a blue and colorless target creature you control can't be blocked this turn. So this idea that you have this enchantment that essentially is just letting you dig through your library, you know, just a little bit each turn, and then they said Magma Jet was also, you know, pseudo Spoiled, which is a reprint from Fifth Dawn, two damage burn spell that has Scry 2, which in a red deck, you know, Scry is probably where it's at. It's like blue, like, is obviously amazing with Scry, but giving red that kind of card selection is so good.
Oh, I mean, it's going to be insane. Like, it gives red what red was asking for years, right? We want a way to fix our hand. Oh, okay. So, I mean, it'll be sweet. I like anything that makes more decisions happen. I don't think it's any secret that I am the weakest link in terms of competitive players on At Your End Step, but at the same time, I do value the idea that this should be a skill game. So, Scry 3, okay, oh gosh, any of these could be correct, and then at the end of the game when your opponent's like one life short of dead, and you're like, oh goddammit, I know I messed up somewhere.
I totally agree. I definitely, like, you know, Scry, like, you have to be careful with it, because, like, cards, like, people are like, oh, maybe the Reaper Preordain, and I don't think that's going to happen at all, because that card was stupid good. But Serum Visions is, you know, the better, you know, as you're talking about power level version, but it does. It gives you more decisions, it gives you more ways to affect your own, you know, library. I agree. It gives you more control, makes you feel better about what you're doing in the game, or feel worse if you messed up.
Yeah.
Right, and I feel better playing with cards like that, because when I win, I know that I made correct decisions along the way, as opposed to where with Jund right now, you know, it feels like you're just drawing cards and you hope for the answers. But like a deck like that, it's like, oh man, I almost controlled my own destiny. I won that game, so that feels good. Or, oh man, I know I could have taken another card or put that one card on bottom with Scry. Man, I lost that game, not RNG. Now, bad players will always think they scryed into awful cards. You know, anybody that has some self-reflection and owns a mirror will be able to go, oh man, I definitely can become a better player with these more options and more decisions to make. So good job, Wizards.
Yeah, and I think this is, I'm genuinely excited, because like, I never got to play with Scry, but I know it was definitely powerful, so for me to be able to actually be able to play with it, I'm pretty jazzed about it, I'm not going to lie.
You should have played Grapeshot Storm in Modern before it got banned, because Scry was insane with that. It was just, it was the best, it was just really good feel-goods.
Just Preordained and Standard, like, you thought Ponder was good, man? Preordained, just...
It was that worth that.
I should have devotions and what is a devotion in standard, draw 2 for 3 sorcery speed. Not funny anybody. Okay, swing and a miss, Jordan.
Are you talking about divination?
Divination, not devotion. Devotion is a thing people do to things.
Wow, that's okay. Can we just ignore that one? Like, let's move forward. That was just bad.
If you told the joke right, it would have been funny.
Yeah, it would have been actually kind of good, right? But I just
maybe I don't know.
I don't know, man.
You say some dumb stuff sometimes. Really. You can't use that. You just because you made a mistake. Guys, it's not a get out of jail free card.
Could be. You don't know. It could be the cancer. How do you feel?
I don't feel bad at all. I'm
disclaimer. We're not making light of cancer. I actually have cancer. I don't want people to think we're being really insensitive to like.
That's true. No, we probably preface that.
Wow, you guys are really heartless. There's no way that guy has cancer. Just to be sure, they're insensitive towards me, not the disease.
Friends. Man, that divination joke was funny.
Woo! Whatever got you had cancer. LOL devotion! Ha ha!
Wow. So, moving on.
The story of tonight. The more you know without your heads up.
So, there was something that was actually just recently spoiled while we were podcasting. We talked about the Biden of Thassa last week. We have another one of the legendary enchantment artifacts. Enchantifacts, if you will. Legendary Enchantifact. Copyright.
#Enchantifact. Use the hashtag on Twitter.
Please do. Please proliferate that as much as you can. Not the mechanic. Just use it. It is the bow of Nylea. So Nylea is the green god. So this is a legendary Enchantifact for green and one colorless. It comes into play. Doesn't have any edge of the battlefield effects, but all of your attacking creatures have death touch. So that's not bad.
Makes first strike amazing.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. And then next we have an activated ability. So I think this is kind of interesting because you don't necessarily always see static effects on artifacts. You most of the time see them on enchantments, and usually artifacts have activated abilities.
Well, this is an enchant effect, so that makes sense, Morgan.
Oh!
Exactly. That's what I'm getting at. Because they're combining them, Jordan.
Like an enchantment and an artifact is like an enchant effect. # enchant effect. I don't know.
Why am I even here?
Dude, I don't know. Application's being taken for a new host.
I'm just trying... We haven't make compelling, yet, so. Compelling discussions about the things that we all appreciate.
Well, you see, guys, this legendary enchantment artifact is both an enchantment and an artifact. So,
okay, can we actually talk about the ability here for a minute? We're getting too bogged down.
Sorry.
Anyway, so you can pay one and a green to tap it, and you can choose one. So, put a 1/1 counter on target creature. All right, that's fine. Or Bow of Nylea deals 2 damage to target creature with flying. Oh, okay, that's in Green's wheelhouse. Or you gain 3 life. Or put up to 4 target cards from your graveyard onto the bottom of your library in any order. So
it's a lot of choices. I mean, none of the abilities I think are super amazing overall, but this card is, you know, it's aggressively costed and it has so many options.
I'm definitely going to buy one for EDH. I know that doesn't mean anything to, like, our general conversation, but the card's just fun, too. Mm-hmm. Like, these enchant effects are going to be fun to play with. I'm wondering, the put up to 4 cards from your graveyard on the bottom of your library, we don't have a whole lot of shuffle effects in Standard, unless I'm forgetting some. So I'm wondering if we're going to get some, or if... You know what I mean? Like, are we going to get... The mysterious fetches? Oh God!
No, like, we will get fetches. No,
I will say it's been said a lot that we're looking at the Nimbus maze cycle, which is fine. But I think honestly, really this card this is a green effect. So, you know, this is like shuffling cards in your, all the way back to Gaea's Blessing. It's a green effect, so I think it's pretty simple. It's interesting if you have, like, mill effects. Like, it's also pretty cool if you have something like surgical extraction, something like that, where you're just like, oh, actually, you can't do that.
Right. there are reasons where you'd want to stuff something back in your deck, whether it's on the bottom or wherever.
Sure, sure. Obviously, stopping yourself from being milled to death is good, because that's better than a Nephalia Drawn Yard, right? Like, oh, I'll mill you 3, okay, well, I'll get back 4. But I was just kind of hoping there, part of me wants to hope there's some other cool shuffle effect coming to make that more relevant.
I don't like shuffle effects anymore. They've actually been pretty vocal about, like, they call them load screens. A bunch of Wizards employees call them load screens. So when you play a shuffle effect like a fetch land, you're taking time out of the game to do something that, you know, should be a shortcut.
Oh,
so they have actively tried to reduce this.
See, and I hear that, and that makes sense to me for new players and stuff like that. But, like, and you have a game like Ascension where you shuffle literally like every 45 seconds, and it's still fun.
That's because Kibler designed it, and he likes flicking his cards.
It's true.
That game was so much fun, though. Oh God. Anyway. The deals 2 damage to a creature with flying is kind of interesting, too. So tokens and stuff like that are going to be interesting.
Kill those harpies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude. The 1-1 black harpies. The once you go black, you go harpy thing.
Yeah, you just mow them all down with your sweet bow.
No, it's a tap effect to activate the ability, so it's, you know, you can't do a billion things in a turn, but still.
Sure.
This card feels very similar to, like, obviously power level is different, but the mana cost is too. But kind of like Primeval Bounty, like, even on an empty board, this card is not a do-nothing. Like, sure, maybe you're just gaining 3 life each turn, but...
Right.
You're gaining 3 life each turn. You know what I mean? Like, it's never not... I like that, because the hard thing about, like, certain enchantments and even artifacts, you know, sometimes they just don't do anything. You know what I mean? Like, look at a card like maybe like a Path of Bravery, which is an M14. You know, you have to have creatures attacking for that card to be anything at all. So if you just have that, like, off the top, it doesn't do anything. So I like the fact that, like, this gives you, again, 3 life, insignificant maybe, but you have mana, you have a way to use it, so it's nice.
Right, definitely. I like it. The art suite, I played a Hunter in WoW, so seeing, you know, like, a bow and a quiver is pretty sick.
I play Hunter in real life, and bows and quivers are pretty sweet.
I play a nerd in real life. I don't know anything about this.
Oh, man. So there are some other ones that have been rumored there. There's a large thread on MTG Salvation about a poster named Troll Creature, you know, which is, you know, cute, that has spoiled some cards, apparently. Apparently there's going to be a Sphinx that when it connects with a player, time walks the controller of the Sphinx. The rumored text is whatever this creature, I think it's Madomai the Ageless, deals combat damage to a player, take an extra turn after this one, and then Madomai the Ageless can't attack during the extra turn, or something like that, that would prevent it from being able to be abused. So, if that is real, that could be pretty interesting. I mean, it is rumored that one of the creatures in Theros will have a Power 9 effect if it connects, if it hits a player.
Right.
Obviously, it's not going to create mana, so it's not going to be any of the Moxes or Black Lotus.
So it's probably not going to be Time Twister.
It's likely not going to be Time Twister. So we're seeing this. They've done this before with a creature, so this wouldn't be the first time that we've seen, you know, to being able to take extra turns when it connects. Likely, it'll be something like the Sphinx that we are seeing. This hasn't been confirmed, but also hasn't been taken down. Usually Salvation's pretty good at taking down false rumors and false claims. This is also the same thread where there was confirmation of Magma Jet, so could be something. Now the other one that has been spoiled and actually has some modification to it is Chained to the Rocks. Now this is an actual name that WotC did spoil for a card name, but it's 1 white and it's an enchantment aura. And it just says, enchant, you know, you blank, you control. When Chained the Rocks enters the battlefield, exile target creature and opponent controls until Chained to the Rocks leaves the battlefield. So that also is a very interesting card, if true, obviously. I think that this is kind of compelling. Again, these cards haven't necessarily been confirmed by WotC, but they are coming from a seemingly somewhat credible source as far as that goes. So, you know, fairly interesting to see that, if that is true. This is also where there is some rumor of it being, you know, a cycle similar to either Horizon Canopy or Nimbus Maze-esque sort of land cycle. I honestly, I want to know what those lands are so bad. Last year, when Innistrad was first coming out, at the PAX party, they actually spoiled the lands, which were the Czech lands, but enemy color Czech lands for Innistrad to match to finish out the Czech land cycle, which are like Glacial Chasm, Riverbound Crag, and they were spoiled at the PAX party. Same thing for Shock lands. So I'm really hoping that we get to actually see what these lands are at the PAX party this year.
Is that this weekend?
That is this weekend.
Ooh.
I know, nice. Isn't exciting?
Oh, it is. So by the time this episode goes up, we may already know, and this is entirely worthless exercise.
We may already know, but it is exciting. Something I always get excited about, and something that I actually learned while being a competitive Magic player, was liking lands, because lands are the core of your deck. So when I first started playing Magic, you'd open a booster bag and you get a rare land, you're like, fuck this noise, who gives a shit? I want the stupid Timmy card. But once you get more and more into competitive Magic, you open a land and you're like, this is consistent money, typically, for rare lands. So you, as a Magic player, if you still do open packs, opening land suddenly shifts from being a bad thing to a good thing. And that kind of leads us into our question of the week. We obviously haven't done one in a little bit of time, but we definitely wanted to do one this week. And we wanted to take a look at, understanding the game in some facet. And, with our game, we do have different levels of rules enforcement depending on, at where you're playing, whether it's an FNM, a PTQ, a GP, what have you. Really boils down to, when do you decide to help new players with their mistakes, and when is the best time, to do this within a game? It can be a touchy issue, because if you're at, playing casually, or if you're at an FNM, calling a judge on someone for something might feel a little bit weird, especially if it's a friend or if it is someone that you know is new. So what do you guys, let's start off with you guys, in regards to this question.
Let me give a little bit more background question on the question, because I tossed this out here after a conversation I had this week about a local player being possibly upset because they felt wronged during a tournament that they thought was basic. Okay, meaning it wasn't like a PTQ or something like that. And I had a long conversation back and forth about like how did this person feel wronged? You know what I mean? Like, what was it? And it seemed like it was not so much a gotcha as cheating, but more like a gotcha because I know the rules better than you. And I know from a new player that can be really disappointing the first time, but like I struggle with this because for example, the first time I ever went to an FNM, I took a deck that was not Type 2 legal. I didn't know what Type 2 was. I got paired round one. I had my opponent see a card and immediately, tell the guy who owned the store, like, hey, he can't be playing this. They came over, they took my deck, they took like 10 cards out of it. Okay, you can't play these, gave me basic lands, and I proceeded to go 0 and a million with my 30 land card deck. And part of me was really upset, but then next time I knew how to try and build the deck. Whereas if they just kind of said, oh, it's okay, you can do this for now, but next time it's not okay, I don't think that would have been as impactful, at least for how I want to view the game. Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, I struggle still back and forth. There are definitely times where I'm going to be like, okay, yeah, like, hey, can I take this back? Yeah, you can. And there's other times where I'm just going to be like, no, and you lose.
Yeah, it is very interesting. My personal experience with FNM, I don't take FNM very seriously, and it's mainly because it's not necessarily always a consistent play experience. You're not going to go to FNM always and play against the most competitive decks that you're going to see in every tournament. You're going to play against people who are new, who, this might be their first FNM, this might be their 27th FNM, and you never know the kind of, level of experience that you're going to be getting when you go there. So it is casual rules enforcement, so it's not something that is as strict as your typical competitive level of that.
You know what? Hold on. I think our terms are undefined when you say casual. I think there's even a difference between casual and regular rules enforcement. that I think is important to just delineate the difference between. We say casual when we're referring to FNM, but that's regular rules. That's a tournament. FNM is an actual event where there are prizes on the line, where you're playing for something. Whereas regular or casual, in my opinion, is like you're just playing games. You're just like sitting down from the nobody across the table and just like grinding out some games just for fun. But I think FNM is a little different than casual. There is a rule enforcement as opposed to laissez-faire that I think is an important thing to delineate. And I guess that kind of lends to my position on the topic. But I think we need, like, when we're referring to FNM, we shouldn't be referring to it as a casual event. Because while you have casual players there, you're not playing by casual rules.
Sure, I mean, there is still enforcement, there is still rules that you can, you do have to abide by at FNM, but, I mean, it's just not the same experience, I don't think. I don't think that I could ever...
I don't think you should look at a Zelda testing experience.
I think I could take that a step further, and I did with this conversation here. FNM, for example, over the next few weeks in our local area, a lot of the stores are giving away from the vaults. At FNMs.
Right.
And like full boxes and like a bunch of other prizes. Like Comic Con, our local store, is really good about, like, you know, they step up the prizes. From the vaults, you know, you're talking about selling, like, you know, that's a $200 product. So I would be much more likely to view that FNM as really competitive as opposed to the cat, you know, and I will say casual, like when you only have like 12 people and you're playing, you know, four rounds.
Sure.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I'm store credit on the line, right?
So I think I could still view some FNM events as casual and some FNM events as kind of cutthroat.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean obviously. I was just speaking in generalities. No, I mean, there's obviously circumstances. Definitely. That come up that raise the stakes, if you will, and that's fine. But you also have to understand that that's not the same for everyone. So sure, for us, for the spikier players, those stakes are raised. But there's still people that just show up there and that have that same mentality, regardless of the payout, because they just want to play. This is the only time they play Magic, and that's all they want to do. Right. They just want to have a good time.
No,
and
sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's okay. You'll get your time, Jordan. Don't worry. Why don't you back off?
I'm sorry, honey.
I'm expounding on the topic here.
You're doing well.
I appreciate it.
Please expound further.
Yeah. Are you liking it? Like
expound further.
Anyway, so when it comes down to it, people, I really feel that people go to FNM because they want to unwind. It's their Friday night. They want to spend it doing something that they love doing. That is their hobby, and it is to play Magic. And I really feel that when I was playing FNM, that it was a learning experience for me. And I went to FNM because I wanted to learn how to be a better player. Because the people that I was playing against, I wasn't getting enough enrichment from them. Because they were very casual people, playing very casual decks. And that's just not where I wanted to be. I wanted to start winning and getting something out of this game. And going to FNM was that next logical step for being a casual player. Now, if I had gone to an FNM and it had been just super competitive, and that I didn't feel like I had a chance, and people weren't nice, and people were constantly trying to play the getcha game, then I probably wouldn't have continued to play Magic. But people were nice, and people would take the time to explain things to me, and not just be calling judges about things that I didn't even understand. Now, I will definitely concede the point that I was definitely an educated player going into playing Standard and knowing what the rules were and everything like that. I wasn't just a green player there was no rules that I necessarily, you know, played by that I just had never understood, like how to play Magic in a competitive environment. I feel that especially. Especially people like us that do have somewhat of a vocality in the local community, that we do need to be ambassadors to people that are new the best ways that we can, especially at FNM. I feel like no one likes to be embarrassed. No one likes to really be called out when there is a mistake or something like that. And if you can take care of something on a personal level with someone that's new, that you may have a rapport with if they've been there for a while, then, I mean... Unless it's something like terrible, unless they're cheating or something like that, then obviously they need to be, you know, called out on that. But if it's just like a rules thing that they just don't understand, then just take the time to explain it to them. Be like, hey, this is how this works. If you don't believe me, that's okay. I'm your opponent. Maybe you shouldn't believe me. Right. You can call a judge, but yeah. I don't want to make you feel bad because, you know, I'm calling a judge on you. If we both agree to call a judge, then it's not so bad. And those are the best judge calls that, that I've had experience with, is the ones that, you know, are kind of like, hey, you know, I'm just going to do this. Just, you know, I just feel that we should just get this explained. Just like the story I was telling last week where with the demure charm, where it's just like, hey, you know, I'm not sure if this is how it is. I'm just going to call a judge. But that's a different event. That's a competitive level event. You know, that's that's competitive REL where I feel that it's very stringent, and it feels that it is, it changes in this fact. If you can, you don't feel bad for not calling a judge at F&M for something that happens that's small, because it's just F&M. But if you lose the game because of it, and like you just forget about it, you're like, oh, that sucks. If it's just like a regular F&M, like it's whatever. To me, it rolls off my back. And that could not be the same for everyone. Some people might not take losing as well.
I mean, I definitely wouldn't lose because they played the game wrong. They just did a little thing wrong and now I'm going to lose. It's whatever. Because that helps literally no one.
Right. You know? I mean, I'm just saying, like, but not calling a judge at a competitive level event, it just seems...
Oh, yeah, that's incorrect. Stupid. Call a judge at a competitive event.
Yeah, it just seems stupid.
I think your opponent looks at you in a creepy way, fly your hand up, I guess, but... Yeah,
that's
not
accurate. Don't do that.
No, I mean...
Magic players look at people creepily all the time.
I don't know. I struggle with this. I want to help new people.
Mm-hmm.
I want to teach the game. I mean, Mike is obviously does this for life. He loves teaching. But I think there's a time where... I mean, at a certain point at F&M, right, there's only so much you can explain to somebody before it gets to be where that's not your job. For example, I was playing in a regular REL draft very, very recently, and this isn't even a rules thing, but one of the questions that we were talking about, when do mistakes make for the best learning opportunity, I attacked, he declared blocks, I said, are you good? And he was like, yeah, no, I'm good. So I started to do things with my mana, and like I was kind of flicking cards and thinking, and he goes, well... Actually, so I can play around this card that I think you have and tried to move another creature up to block. And, like, he was new, and he even said before it started this was his first draft. But at a certain point, I was like, no, dude, I mean, like, it's been 30 seconds. Like, you know what I mean? And like, I felt bad for that. And he even said, he goes, well, I guess it's to your advantage, so yeah. Which, like, first off, go to hell. Like, you know, and, like, and I don't know if that's appropriate. I feel like... If I know my friends, Mike would be more apt to feel that way with me than Morgan. But any time that a new player makes me feel bad for being competitive, I instantly lose any and all desire to help them.
I mean, I don't know how that helps anyone though. Like that's the thing. Him going, well, I guess I could play around that card that you have, and that's his first draft. That is actually a very good observation because most people probably wouldn't make that. Most people probably would be like, well, you could have this card, and I could play around it. Most people would be like, yeah, that's it, and not even think twice about it.
He did a good thing 30 seconds too late.
But then you're just like, go fuck yourself.
That's not what I'm saying. This is the point I want. I want to mention this because this is. What point, okay, because I agree with you to an extent, Jordan, there is definitely, I think you learn more in this game sometimes from making a terrible mistake, and it feels terrible, but there's also, there's definitely some moments in the game where I'm going to say, yeah, you can take this back, and there's moments in the game where I'm going to say, no, you can't do that, I'm never going to do it at a competitive level, but even at F&M, and I'll be honest, it changes if I'm winning or not, if I'm well ahead in the game, I'm going to let an opponent do whatever they want. I'm just going to be honest. I will explain to them why they can't do that or why this is wrong, and then I'll say, okay, go ahead and do this. If I'm losing, even at an F&M, I'm probably less apt to help my opponent beat me, even if they're newer. I don't see a reason to do that to myself.
Right. I mean, and to me, it's not a point of who does it help, whatever. It's when someone, like, when you go, well, actually, it's been kind of a little bit since you've declared blocks, and I've been thinking through lines of play, and he goes, well, I guess, yeah, it favors you. I can see why you'd feel that way. That's, at that point, you're just being rude, and not going to do something that I don't have to.
But, so, I mean, I don't understand how that's rude. He's just making a statement. Like, he could just be like, oh, well, I can understand where you're coming from with that, being that it would be to your advantage to not allow me to do
that. Well, the correct response is like, okay, you're right, it's been too long.
Well, he was trying to make a joke. Well, I can understand why you do that.
It wasn't funny then. I don't know, it wasn't funny.
Well, because you're an asshole. No,
because there's a moment where, like, if you're playing somebody new and, like, you and they do something that's You know, and they're like, oh, wait, actually, I meant to do that, and they do it pretty quickly after. I'm never, ever to a new player, you know, at regular rel gonna go, oh, actually, you declared your colors on your checkland, so no. Or, like, you tapped wrong, nobody. Because, like, you're new, I understand, I want this game to be fun for you. But, like, there's a certain point where a line has to be drawn and say, like, well, you're gonna make a mistake, you made a mistake, that sucks. And then trying to make me feel bad for your mistake, that doesn't help your cause.
I don't know if he was trying to make you feel bad. I think he might
have. I think context has a lot to do with it, that I may not be conveying, and like tone sure. and everything, that I might just not be conveying. But like, in the moment, I definitely, for a split second, felt bad that I wasn't letting him take this back. And I mean, and you know me, Morgan, like I feel really bad about a lot of things that aren't my fault.
That's true. You do. You have a huge guilt complex.
I felt bad for 2 seconds, and then I was like, wait, no, I'm not incorrect here. Why would I be doing that? So.
But I mean, like, you felt bad because he was new. You didn't feel bad because you weren't letting him do what he was doing. You just felt bad because he made a mistake, and you know how that feels being a new player. Like, you know how that felt being in that guy's shoes, being like, I fucking should have done that, and I didn't. And that, like, that's a mistake. So that's why you probably, I imagine that's why you felt bad. Like, and that's probably why you're like, nah, fuck this. Because, like, that's how you are now. Like,
I don't know. I wasn't doing anything wrong.
And no, exactly.
Not doing something wrong. That's, and I think, like, that's where I got hung up, as I, you know, and that's what you said. But I mean, like, so I think what we're getting to is there's a gray line, and there's a gray line, and it kind of, you just have to feel out situations.
I'm going to throw another variable at you here for this question. I also think it depends on the type of player you're playing against. Is it a new player? Is it a casual player? Okay. Or, and I'm just going to be very blunt here, is it a terrible player? Because we just tend to assume like the bad player is new, but it actually isn't always true. Okay, and I think, you know, in the case that you're talking about, Jordan, if it's a brand new player, I'm more likely to be sympathetic. But when you make a comment like that, but there's a lot of players who aren't not very good or don't know how to deal with their actions. Like they don't, like you said, Morgan, they don't think through a play, and they get really belligerent. I actually have one pulled up in front of me because I sent this to a person because I thought it was so funny. I was playing Cockatrice this week. I was playing against an affinity opponent in Modern, and I had attacked, and he blocked, and then he sacrificed his Ravager to move some stuff. I'm like, okay, after you sacrifice Ravager, I'll blood rush the guy that was blocked there. And he goes, okay, then he goes and points another blocker to a guy that he didn't block with before. And I'm like, no, you don't get to do that. And he's like, and this is his exact quote, I have priority, I can do whatever I want until I say so. and I'm like, no, and they get, you know, especially, you know, this obviously, you know, Cockatrice, much like Modo, you know, you have this lovely veneer of the internet, so you can, you know, people feel like they can say what they want, but like right there, it's like, you know, there's a lot of players in real life too who, man, when you do something, they just know that's not how this works, and you're like, right. Yes, it is, and then all of my patience for the rest of that match is gone. Because if you want to understand how something is done correctly, or if you feel that I'm wrong, then you have to go through the proper channels. And I think newer players don't know the proper channels. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Casual players probably do know the proper channels, okay? And poor players, a lot of the times ignore the proper channels because they don't want to be
familiar with the proper channels, and they choose to ignore them.
That's exactly it. They ignore it because they honestly, I mean, I know there's a lot of players who know they'll get told they're wrong.
Yep.
Okay? So I think I'm much more sympathetic to the new player. I'm more sympathetic to the new player than I am to the casual player. And the player who isn't very good, I'm sympathetic until they're belligerent, and then I'm done with them.
Right, right. That's fair. I mean, there's nothing wrong with wanting to help someone who wants to get better. But the instant they switch from that, I just need to get better, to the, dude, bro, I'm better than you, the problem.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's, yeah.
I mean, and I don't want to seem like I'm a dick. I mean, in that same draft, I was playing against another guy who was
kind of new. You are, but it's okay.
Yeah, thank you, dear. And I was playing against another guy who just forgot to swing with his 2-2, with my no dudes. And he was obviously newer, and he was like, oh, man, I always seem to forget attack phase. I was like, it's okay, tap him, I'll take two. Just next time, remember. You know, that's fine, and I think that's kind of the other side of the coin. I don't know, taking back plays and having an attitude about it is kind of where I would draw.
Okay, now here, I want to get into this, okay.
Okay.
So an opponent missed an attack, and you said, oh, okay, it's cool, I'll take two. Is this early in the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was like turn three or something like that. I mean,
how did you feel about the game?
Do you mean overall?
Yeah, did you have a good hand? Did you feel good about your deck?
I was just being nice. I really didn't actually...
Okay, fair enough.
I didn't hate my deck. I guess I thought I had a fairly good deck, despite my results.
Okay, but you did allow this person who missed an entire attack and passed the turn to attack. Now, later, when a person wants to rearrange their blocks, okay, did you have a trick?
I mean, it was an on-field trick. I was going to give a guy deck. Like, it was visual.
But you had it. You had it.
Right, okay? Yes.
So because... So the first one feels irrelevant because you're not doing anything. But the second one, there's a competitive edge to the fact that you at least intrinsically believe that you got your opponent to play into what you wanted them to play into. And then when they want to take that, you know, I think it's interesting because, like, you said it was an on-field trick. Okay, maybe that's enough where it's like he had the awareness he needed to know beforehand. And that's where I think maybe it's fine to not let him take that back. You know what I'm saying? Even though it's good, Morgan, that he thought of it. You know what I mean? But, like, the first one, you're more liable to just, like, yeah, I take two because it has no bearing, you know, until, like, you're at two and you're like, well, I wish I wouldn't have taken two. But, but like, in that game, you have played your... Because, like, that's one of the things that makes me so mad because I feel the moment you feel good as a player is when you have successfully, you know, either bluffed or put your opponent in the position you want them into. You've planned out your turns for two or three turns. You get the attack you want. You get the block you want. And then they go, oh, wait, I want to do this. And there's something, you know, it's almost like a violation where it's like, no, this is the plan.
So, yeah, but I mean, like, in that turn, in Jordan's example, you're saying that he played into his opponent being a bad player because of the onboard. I'm assuming this is Vial of Poison. Is this correct?
Oh, no. We were playing RTR block.
Oh, RTR block. Okay, yeah. That was M14. Anyway, but, like, an onboard, like, something that he can clearly see in the play zone. So, like, I understand where you're playing, where you're, like, where you're, what you're saying, like, well, I have this Gorkhan Rampager, and I'm going to do these tricky plays that don't make sense, so it's going to throw my opponent off kilter, and then they're going to make a mistake, and that's when I take advantage of them. When I don't feel good when my opponent's just bad and makes bad mistakes.
I didn't say I felt good about it. I just said I wasn't going to let him take back a bad play. Because then, like, the next
time...
I'm
going with joy.
Yeah, because then, like, I mean, like, no, I wasn't like, yeah, I'm the sickest drafter ever. But, like, at the same time, like, with next turn, why don't I just go, hey, lay out your hand, I'll tell you what the best play is.
Okay,
I literally mean that. Like, that's what I'm talking about, is, like, where does that line stop of helping somebody versus just, like, telling them how to beat you?
But you didn't help him. Like, he helped himself. He said that, I guess I could play around that card.
Hey, good for him.
Right, so but you weren't helping him.
Yeah, it really helped him.
You would
him
be helping him if you gave him a time machine and we went back in time and did it. But I'm just saying...
No, see, I think that's where you're a little off there, though, Morgan, personally, because you're not giving him a time machine for last time. You're giving him, like, I forgot to do this time, and I may lose because of it. So next time, I need to remember to do it.
I'll never miss that combat trick. Like, he became a better player through a mistake. I would hate if, like, at FNM, I play into more or Elliot's Wrath spell with Naya Blitz, and I'm like, oh, wow, my bad, let me take back these three dudes because I forgot you had a Wrath spell. Oh, put them in the grip. And, like,
but I mean, like...
That mistake twice. That's the exact same thing that we're talking about. It's only it's over 30 seconds instead of a turn.
Correct. Like, it's a difference of time that we're speaking of. And
I think 30 seconds in a different step of the combat phases.
I don't think the time has anything to do with it. You said, you are these your blocks? And he said, yes. That confirmation signals the end of the blocking step. So it doesn't matter how much time. It could be like, you could immediately go, all right, I'm going to go do this. And if he said, oh, hey, wait, now, he verbally agreed to this. And I know that, I mean, again, let me ask you this, Morgan, because you seem to be defending this a little bit, and that's fine. Is it wrong?
There has to be a devil's advocate.
This is the, I agree. This question I agree. Time, I think. Is it wrong to... So you the first couple turns of a game, you have identified that your opponent is not playing on the same level you are. Okay, we're talking level thinking, right? Mm. Is it wrong to take advantage of the fact that you understand interactions better than your opponent?
Is it wrong to...
No. My opponent thinks this is going to happen. I know that this is going to happen.
Is it wrong to play your cards correctly? No. It is never wrong to play your cards correctly.
I guess I see what Mike's thinking. Let's say I play a guy.
I understand what Mike's saying as well. I do, but, like, it's never wrong to play your cards correctly.
Right.
It's not my fault that my opponent doesn't understand my cards. Sure. I can always call a judge if he needs an explanation of the cards. That's fine. It's never wrong to play your cards incorrectly.
So what changes from that to my scenario?
I'm just thinking, I'm thinking of my personal interactions with players in a store and being a larger part of a Magic community. And I, I know that how I interact with players has deeper ramifications than me just being a cat, me just being a dude in a Magic store. So I can understand, like, I completely and honestly see both sides of this scenario and see the pluses and the minuses of it. But I don't think we all can just have the same conversation. So that's why I usually do this. I usually pick the opposite side of what you guys do.
No, but, I mean, that's fine too. Like, this is definitely the best question I think we've had. So
yeah, and it's just that I don't want stories of me being like, being, from people that play in our store of being negative, because I can have dire ramifications of what I am able to do as a Magic player.
I totally agree, and I'm not talking about scumming a player by any means. I mean, you know,
but that's the thing though, because what Jordan did, we can see it as not scumming a player out. Does that player understand that though? Does that
care?
So on here,
thing. You
should
have
let
to
that fear control what Jordan does.
What?
I'm afraid this guy might badmouth me later, so I should give him this. I don't know if I like that logic. I don't know if I like it.
But you have to look at it this way. So I mean, like that player's opinion sells clout somewhere.
Sure. Let me presuppose an analogy. The homeless guy that sits in front of the Dollar General sometimes at Comic Town. Let's say I give him $2. I do it just because I think you should help out needy people. The guy in front of Comic Town goes, "Wow, that guy's a pretentious prick. But he does that to make himself feel good. That guy does have an opinion, and that opinion holds clout, but that opinion is incorrect and very wrong."
Doesn't matter. That's the thing. It's an opinion. It can't be right or wrong. It's irrelevant.
I shouldn't just give money to the homeless guy because the guy in front of Comic Town might think I'm a prick.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that there are ramifications to actions.
You
do have to be aware of yourself. You do have to be aware of those actions.
Jordan Kennedy told me to some blocks that I made.
But you don't know. But you don't know who that kid's going to talk to. But that kid is a shopper and a player of Magic at a store. And you do, if you are a bigger part of that store, the actions that you take may take on more of a life than what they used to.
Next time I play that guy, I'll sign him 2-0.
No, you're taking that too far, Jordan.
No, but right, you're going to the extreme. I'm just saying.
Of what we're presupposing is that his opinion of me matters. So,
but you're saying you're automatically saying that it doesn't, but it does.
Well, his opinion does.
He didn't say it doesn't matter. He just said he didn't care.
I don't.
Okay, but
correct.
I don't necessarily agree with that because I can't necessarily agree that even the people that I play with, I want them to have positive interactions with me because that matters to me as being a Magic player.
But I am not going to lose games that I don't need to lose or do things that I don't need to do in the course of being a competitive player to make someone else have a positive interaction with me. If I do something that is within my legal and I think moral right at that point to say, hey, no, your blocks have been declared. Do you have agreed to this
moral right?
I like that too. No, I am honestly, I'm just kind of forcing a discussion at this point.
No, this is really good because like, I like the debate. So I don't think that if I hold a guy to a block and he doesn't like that and he goes and tells people that I'm scummy, I do not feel bad, nor do I care that his opinion of me is as a scumbag. Now, I'm not saying this guy, it feels this way, obviously. This guy probably just thinks, you know, I might be a little too competitive or whatever. I'm not saying that this guy thinks I'm a scumbag. But if he did walk out of that going, man, that guy's a scumbag because he held me to my blocks, well, then he can think that. Who cares? Because his opinion of me is incorrect because I am not a scumbag given that situation. Sure. I'm a guy playing a game within the confines of the rules
and
the Wizards of the Coast of the
Staff. And that's fine, and that's the way that you see it. But I'm just saying there can be instances where other people don't see it that way, and things get blown out of proportion.
For you,
because I mean, this is just kind of general advice in life. Sometimes you do things that people get highly more offended of than what your intent was, and sometimes those things do have dire impacts on the rest of your existence.
Sure, thanks. And in hindsight, some advice for life, I think it's inappropriate to give a shit.
And I will say, like, you guys know me, like, at an FNM, I get harassed about this, but I'm the first person, like, after a match, I will sit down and be like, hey, just so you know, when this happened, you could have done this. I do this with you guys. I like watching your guys' board states. I take pictures of board states all the time just to talk about, like, hey, could this have happened? And definitely with a lot of opponents at FNMs and stuff, I like to talk about, like, certain scenarios, but I'll be the first to tell you that I normally wait to do it till after the game's over. I mean, like, I'm going to play the game to its completion. There's a lot of times I will let an opponent take something back, but I've also, like early on, I would I always felt like, you know, my wife actually, like, you know, harassed me about this, because there were times even in competitive events where I'd be like, yeah, you made a mistake, you know, and I would sit there and think, well, karma might come back to me, and it doesn't, and you get screwed, and then you're like, well, you know, can't be nice to anybody. And I think your demeanor more than anything. Like, I've talked before, you know, my name, you know, I go by Big Tears, but I've done a lot of work to try and calm that down.
Right.
Because I know that there's definitely some opponents, especially, you know, early on in my Magic career, who I lost a game to them over something miserable, and that person probably never wants to see me again, because I was just awful. So I try not to be like that anymore. I think there's just this fine line, you know, you can't cheat. And I think something that we need to kind of hit on with this too is how you shouldn't try to take advantage of these players either. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think you're taking advantage of a player if they confirm their block and then they want to chain something. But I'll mention. Do you guys remember this a couple of Pro Tours ago when Jackie Lee got disqualified?
Yeah, for the Exalted thing.
It was a life total.
With the Shrieking Affliction.
Yes.
It was stab wound.
And her opponent was, like, marking life totals, but wasn't vocally saying stab wound. Okay? So she was just ignoring it. She was like, okay. And it waited until, you know, he said, okay, you're at this, and kind of, like, went for lethal, and she's like, no, I'm at this life total. And she got disqualified for that. Now, I read the whole article. I read her intent. I'm not going to sit here and say that this person is trying to cheat or anything, but I don't think you could look at that situation and not say, like, you knew your opponent had an intentional difference in viewpoint, right? Mm-hmm. And you should always try to clarify that. And I think that's the big, you know, communication and Magic. The judges say it all the time, but when a tournament starts, like, you know, communicate clear with your opponent. If you are not communicating clearly, if you are not making decisions vocally, if you are not explaining what your card is doing when you're doing it, then I think you get into that territory where it's like, maybe you're trying to be a little scummy. Maybe you're trying to, you know, screw somebody.
No, I like what you said, particularly about demeanor and the way that you carry out through these interactions. Now, like, let's take my example, because I think it's a good one for the sake of the discussion. Guy blocks, and he's like, oh, man. And I'm like, oh, is your blocks? He's like, yes. And then a couple seconds later, he tries to change it. I'm like, whoa, no, what are you, an idiot? Like, if I do that, or if I'm like, no, blocks are declared, and then, like, I go back and shuffle my hand, and he's just like, well, I mean, I guess it favors you, and I'm like, well, yeah, it does, duh. You know, like, if I'm a dick about it, then I think it's a lot different than him going, well, can I redeclare blocks to play around that trick that I should have solved a minute ago? I'm like, oh, I mean, no, blocks are declared, and he's like, well, I mean, I guess it favors you, that makes sense, and then I'm like, because I don't know how to respond to awkward situations for the life of me. And I'm just like, yeah. And I look back at my hand, and I just do the trick, and I win. Like, I don't think that's... So I think demeanor is actually a really big deal in how you deal with it. Like, in bad players, too. Like, helping out a bad player, and then how you carry yourself when that interaction with that bad player goes from okay to bad. You know, when they turn the tables and start being negative towards you, how you carry yourself in the midst. So I would like to think, you know, Morgan, back to you saying your perceived reputation is what matters, I would like to think that player walked away and go, well, that guy might be really competitive and really big stickler on the rules, he at least treated me like a human and didn't treat me like an idiot. He just told me, no, we're going to stick to the play that you made. And I don't feel bad, and if that's not the case, then, you know, maybe I misrepresented myself. If he's like, no, dude, I thought you were a dick about it, well, then he thinks there's something awkward about, like, this guy with an afro who stutters. I don't know. But I did like what you said about demeanor. I think that matters a lot, and how you carry yourself through these awkward interactions at times. God, my blood pressure went up. I think we did well.
I will say, you know, I think Wizards has done a good job of trying to, like, make that bridge. Because before, yes, it was, like, F&M, and then you go to a PTQ. And now they have game day, which you have to, you know, register your deck. There's going to be a judge. So I think if you are, you know, if you're playing against these players who are, you know, you think they're newer, they need this kind of help, encourage them to do that. Because, you know, we see them all the time. We go to these PTQs, and there's players there who are paying money to have a really bad experience, right, to have opponents who are, you know, at a PTQ, there's going to be no forgiveness. You know what I mean? And I think those players sometimes walk away with a really bad taste in their mouths when they don't realize that they shouldn't have been there. And that sounds terrible. Like, any player should go to whatever they want to go to. But you're talking about, you know, like,
I'm not going to NFL training camp.
Yeah, I mean, like, I like to play baseball. I'm not trying out for the Clippers down here in Columbus. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
There's got to be some sort of recognition. And I think the frustrating thing, I think, from our end, and players who are grinders, who have played a long time, you want to be patient. You want to teach. You want to help them. But so many players they don't like the help. They don't like hearing a card doesn't work the way they want it to. You know, no one argues with them when they play Monopoly. You know what I mean? It's just...
You know, I think you said a good thing about the PTQs. When you go to a PTQ and you're this little Johnny, you spend $25 to go to drop and hate Magic for the rest of your life. You're playing against guys who don't care that you're there. Just like, you know, me and you, if we went to a Clippers tryout, we wouldn't hit a ball and we'd probably be like, oh man, baseball sucks. But if we went to like a fall softball league, i.e. game day, in a much grander scale, right, in a much elongated analogy, like, a game day is a good stage for, if I'm playing a guy at game day, like Morgan and I in the most recent game day we played in, we all, until the finals where we met, we both just played new people to competitive Magic. And it was really fun because we got to tell people why we loved competing in this game. We got to help kids with their decks. And, like, I've always dreamed of that, right? You read all these things on forums where this guy's like, yeah, this new guy at the store came and I helped him with his deck. Or this kid's like, oh, this guy helped me. It was great. I've always wanted to be that guy. And I got to be that guy. And I got to say, hey, you know, like, so you do these. Once you start getting good at academic game days, go to a BTQ. And you'll never get good at those because none of us do. So I hear what you're saying. Like, the step up, I love that game day is there. GPTs are another good thing to do. Those are a little bit more competitive than game day. But at the same time, they're a good opportunity. And I'm much more lenient at those than I would be at a PTQ. Now, granted, was I kind of tough on a guy about blocks at regular rel? Maybe I was an asshole. Now I feel like I probably should kill myself. But I don't know. You know, I hear what you're saying. I definitely like that you delineated the difference between a game day and a PTQ.
Sorry for questioning you a little bit there, Morgan. Had to be done.
Giving us the silent treatment, eh? I don't know. Mike, do you have any good stories with that? With, like, awkward encounters with people? Because I know you're a teacher by trade, and you like to teach. So what, any good encounters with those kind of teaching things?
I'm the kind of person I do like also to, like, help with deck choices and that sort of thing. And I've definitely been able to help with that a lot. So I definitely like in, you know, drafts and stuff too. There's some kids who play locally in the draft sometimes who are, you know, it's kind of nice to be like, hey, you know, don't play this, you know, play this. I think the explanation is important in that case. Like, if someone actively wants to learn, you know what I mean? I'm sitting here on my high horse saying like, oh, we're great at this. I mean, I'm good at F&M. But like if they're asking for help, then, you know, make sure you take the time to, like, I see a lot of players who are like, should I play this? And they're just like, no, it's bad. Okay, but to that newer player, why is it bad?
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. Hey, this card destroys any one land. Well, that's true, but it also costs 6. So,
you know, might not be good for you.
Yeah, when you're playing that on, you know, when you play it on turn 6, how vital is that land you're destroying? You know what I mean? That simple little, like, way of explaining it isn't like, hey, you're stupid for wanting to play this. Hey, reason through why you shouldn't. And right. I think what's really nice is that we've had, there's one kid I'm thinking of particularly at Comic Town who drafts every single week, and he's just been getting better and better, and everyone there, you know, helps him out, but he's got the right demeanor too, you know what I mean? You also have people who come in, especially young, you know, teenagers, that sort of thing, come in, and they just, like, you know, they're hot shit, and, like, you're like, okay, well...
This is 2011, I'm kind of a big deal.
Yeah, exactly, and you're like, man, I hope you don't win a game, and again, it sounds terrible, but it's just like, you just gotta have the right attitude, I guess, and that comes from us, too, like, we, you know, players who played for a long time, you know what I mean, gotta have the right attitude, too, you could be holier than thou, right, Jordan?
Go die. So I want to give a shout out, by the way, to that kid's mom, because she takes him to F&M every single week and just sits there and reads while he drafts. She's like super mom.
She was his team. She was his teammate at 200 Giant the pre-release. It was insane.
What? She was just there from midnight. She beat me and Morgan. Morgan left. We were like, nope, you're crazy. And like, I said something to her once at Subway. I was like, hey, by the way, I think you're cool, because there was no way I could convince my mom to do a giant draft with me at midnight, and let alone teach her how to play. And she was just like, oh, wow, really? I appreciate that. Thank you. It means a lot. I was like, oh, my gosh. What? She's cool. I mean, like that's the kind of person that if he triple blocked and we confirmed blocked, I'd be like, oh, God. Because he wouldn't say anything bad, and I would feel so bad about all to do it. But God, I probably would if there was a From the Vaults 20 on the line.
No, fair enough. And Like I said, it's just good to have a discussion about it.
Definitely.
What my true opinions are probably closer to Jordan and Mike's. Like, obviously, if someone's going to be like, yeah, those are my blocks, so I'm going to be like, yeah, those are your blocks. Like, that is what it is. But yeah, it's important to realize that, you know, how you interact with your opponent, like Mike said, the demeanor that you have is very influential on how you're looked at. And if you do want to become a more focal point of your store, then, you know, you definitely can't just be, you can't just be a jerk. You can't be an asshole about things. Like,
Do you think Obama goes to bed every night going, man, there's some guy in Alabama that thinks I'm a communist?
No,
because they're wrong, and he doesn't.
I'm sure he doesn't. But he also has like millions of people that hate him. Like, we're talking about a small community.
No way. Incorrect opinions are incorrect opinions. I'm just curious. What's your actual opinion on that? If someone like thinks something that's actually just incorrect about you, like that guy's a dick because he held me to my blocks.
But it doesn't matter. Like,
opinion doesn't matter. Very good.
The tricky thing with opinions is that they're not right or wrong. They just are. They are things. Opinions can influence people in incorrect ways. Whether they are right or wrong, it doesn't matter. It's the perception that people have of those opinions that matters. Because the perception is reality. So, I can say that Jordan is a jerk and I hate him. And I can tell that to strangers who don't know you. But as soon as they meet you for the first time, they think you're a jerk. And they hate you. And they may not never overcome that. Think about, I mean, there are plenty of examples of this, that where people have just been influenced by other people's opinions, and that's all they know. And that's all they care about. So, you can say that I don't give a shit about other people's opinions, but it doesn't mean that it still influence how other people
look at
you.
I don't think I care about opinions flat. I care about opinions that accurately represent my actions.
Sure, and I wish that's how the world worked. I really do. I really wish that I can only care about people's opinions that were correct, but there are plenty of people that have incorrect opinions about me that still influence my life.
I'm not going to lose sleep if that guy thinks that was a dick, because I...
And I'm not saying you should, but I am saying that in some weird way that not saying that particular interaction could come back and bite you in the ass in some facet, but there could be an interaction that you have that you see as being so small, but is so vastly impactful to that other person, that it does come back and get you. And it just is a thing that exists in the world. Like, people's opinions of you can sometimes bite you in the ass. Whether it's right or wrong. Because that's not what it is. Because that's, like I said, an opinion is not always a right or wrong sort of thing. It just an is sort of thing.
Moral of the story, when your opponent blocks, you should not, or when you block and your opponent, or you know, you should not look at your opponent and say, gotcha! Now you did!
Yeah, don't do that.
She's back, she's bitch, but
here's what you should do. When your opponent asks you, are those your blocks? You go, wait, and just hold it until you make your decision. And you'll never be wrong.
And
final answer?
That's your final, that's my final answer.
And
wait! No, actually, I'm going to play around that. And then he would have been fucking fine. Nope.
Right, and you know what would have been fun, like, And I think a big thing for new players, too, like, if you're a new guy listening to this podcast and going, like, man, these guys would hate me, there's nothing wrong with taking your time
either.
No. Like, if this guy just would have spent an extra 30 seconds looking at the board, God, don't take an extra 30 seconds, an extra 10 to 15 seconds looking at the board, and we've been like, oh, man, if I block this way, he's just going to kill it because it has first strike and death touch. Wah, wah, wee, wah. And, like, it would have been fine. And I would have been like, hey, dude, take your time. You have to think through your turns. You have plays to make. But when you go, blocks, yup. Dead, bitch. And you're just like, oh, God! Never mind. I don't want to die this turn. LOL. But, so, yeah, anyway, LOLs all around. Good discussion.
Right. No, most certainly. And I'm glad we returned to the question of the week.
God, that was a good one.
I completely
agree. I was legitimately mad at you for, like, 8 seconds, Morgan.
Yeah. Welcome to the fucking club.
But does my opinion matter?
No, because you're an asshole.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, on that note, I think we're going to wrap this show up. But, keep listening. Keep spreading the word. We definitely want more followers on Twitter, more likes on our Facebook page. We definitely want to know if you like what we're doing here. Please write to us. Please tweet at us. We're all on Twitter. If you want to talk to us personally about something so the other assholes don't have to listen to it, that's fine. I don't mind if you guys want to talk to me. I can understand.
Oh, God.